Center for Inclusive Childcare welcomes you to Inclusion Matters. We share resources and information to support quality childcare for all children. By partnering with early childhood professionals, parents, grandparents, and other caregivers, we work together to help every young child thrive. Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast from the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Priscilla Weigel, the Executive Director, and I'm recording today from Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur, from the Early Childhood World Forum Conference. And I've been here this week with my colleague, Kelly Nelson, our program manager at CICC, and we had the great pleasure of presenting with someone that you're going to get to meet, my guest. Her name is Mary Louise Clifford, and she is from Australia. And welcome, Mary Louise.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so glad you're willing to talk with us. We had the opportunity to present at the conference, and we've been meeting on Zoom for quite a few months now. And so we've kind of gotten to know each other, and we've been hanging out all week. And today was the last day of the forum. And we're just going to do a little podcast because I thought our listeners would like to know what early childhood looks like in Australia. And you've been around a while in early childhood in Australia.
I have for over 30 years.
Yeah.
I've been an early childhood teacher and director of early childhood services in Australia.
Yes. And so you can tell us, maybe give our listeners a picture of kind of what early childhood looks like. Childcare, you know, how are things set up? You don't have to go into a ton of little details, but I think people just really don't have any idea.
Well, it's a very different system in Australia. We have services that are funded by the state, and they are usually services for 3 to 5 year olds in a preschool setting.
Okay.
They're often organised and managed by a community-based organisation or attached to a school. But then we have a big component, which are called our long daycare centres, which cater for children from 0 to 6 years old.
Okay.
And parents who are accessing those services are able to access what is called childcare subsidy. Okay. And that's means-based, and families make an application, and depending on their income, determines what portion of the daily fee charged by a long daycare centre that they need to pay. But then there's also additional funding under our universal access to early childhood, where families receive some additional funding to ensure that their children can access services. So it's a little bit of a blend. Mm-hmm. And then we still have home-based, it's called family daycare.
Okay.
In Australia, where it might be a small group of children with one person in a home-like environment.
Okay. So that part, that's similar. The, you know, the options sound similar, but I think it sounds like your supports maybe are more conducive to getting a lot more people some subsidies and benefits.
We have
a lot of different pots of money. We have scholarship funds and those types of things, especially something new in Minnesota in recent years is the early childhood scholarship, that there's different criteria that kids need to meet. And there's a list of really some of those areas that put kids in the high need category. And so in the US, I think every state does it differently, but you in the whole country of Australia consistently have it.
Most definitely. And part of it is a commitment for our government that children can access quality early childhood programs no matter where they come from.
Mm.
So there's definitely a commitment in, whilst it is never enough money, there is a commitment in a sense that every child has the right to attend an early childhood setting and to be with their peers. And with that then comes the family to assist them to be able to afford that access to that care.
Nice. That's fantastic. And so as in your 30 years plus of working in the field, tell me a little bit about some of the roles you've held.
So I have worked for the same employer for 31 years.
Wow.
At one of my roles. We have in Australia what's called the nominated supervisor, which is the person that has the overall control of the day-to-day operations in a service. So I'm the nominated supervisor for two services, one that's located in Glenning Valley and one that's located in Erina, and our service there is called Woodport Early Learning. But we did have a service in Tasmania for a little bit of time as well. Okay. So we're about an hour and a half north of Sydney, coastal area, and one service caters for 46 children aged 0 to 6 years, and the Erina service caters for 60 children 0 to 6 years.
Okay, and how close together are they?
They're very close, only about 25 kilometres apart, so not too far. I can't think of that in miles.
I'm not going to venture to try to do that either. So are you bopping between those two sites?
I do. Most weeks I would spend 2 full days in each service, but that then depends on if there's someone taking leave or something having exciting happening, or there's additional support required in one service over the other. Okay. Because they're so close, there's the opportunity some days to be on both sides.
Okay. And so tell me a little bit about teacher training and expectations for professionals in the field of early childhood in Australia.
So there are no untrained positions at all in Australia. You need to have a qualification or be working towards a qualification. And that's not just being enrolled, that's actively making progress towards a qualification. So we have a range of qualifications at entry level. We have the Certificate 3 in early childhood education. That takes 18 months to complete. The next step is a diploma in early childhood education. That takes another 18 months to complete. And then we also have degree-qualified, university-trained teachers. And the usual program is a 4-year program. And for most people, that covers from birth up to 8 years of age. So they can also teach in a school-based environment, but there's a move now to go more specialty and just look at those early years. Mm-hmm. And the more and more degrees are coming with a focus just on the early years to become really specialists in that field. We do have a really innovative program in Australia as well, where we have what are called school-based trainees. Okay. And for the last 2 years of their high school education, they can undertake the Certificate 3, being employed in a service 1 day a week and working their way through training modules as part of what's called their higher school certificate. So between 16 and 18.
Yeah.
And we've embraced that program because then we see that people often have a passion and they think, I want to be an early childhood educator, and they have to wait and wait and wait. But this gives them the chance while they're at school to build those skills. And then what usually happens for our staff is if they complete that school-based traineeship, then they will roll directly into a diploma and they will have some skills, some knowledge, some expertise, but still be really young to mould and grow and really keep building on that passion that they have of always wanting to work with children.
That's beautiful. And the opportunity to have such a long path of mentorship too.
Most
starting
definitely.
So young. And that's, I mean, I know that for me, you know, I started very early and thankfully I had opportunities to do that. But it sounds like in your country, the weight of the expectation of you're going to be prepared before we put you with children.
Most definitely. Yeah.
In a long months.
A long
process.
Time.
Yeah, not just like a few trainings here and there, but did you say 18 months?
18 months. Okay. And the way that those introductory, the Certificate 3 course, there's a really high expectation within that, that they will have a really clear understanding of the laws and legislation that apply to the early childhood environment, that there will be an understanding of child development. So there's a number of, we call them modules, of modules that cover early childhood development with specialty of thinking about the 0 to 2 year environment, the toddlers, the 2 and 3 year olds, and then moving into the preschoolers and that higher order thinking and thinking, how can I promote that? Subjects that have been included most recently are sustainability and early childhood education, so that becomes embedded in practice of everyday education, inclusion of children, yes. because we know now so much of what happens if we're supporting children yeah. who have inclusion needs under five, that the difference that we can make in assisting those children to achieve their greatest potential if we're fostering that in the 0-5 environment.
Yeah. So when you look at how your classrooms are set up, does it depend on the site, or are all early childhood centers set up exactly the same as far as children and ages, or do you do multi-ages, or
everybody approaches it differently?
Okay.
So for most, it is by age grouping that you will have your nursery with your 0-2 year olds, your toddlers together, your preschoolers together. But for many services that operate the extended hours from 7 a.m. till 6 p.m., there'll often be times where children are grouped together, mm-hmm. where siblings can be together, where peers who gravitate to one group or another can, mm-hmm. but it just depends on the size of the service.
Okay. And so with you, I think when mm-hmm. we were just chatting this week at the conference, I believe you said that you have a lot of folks on your team who are also long-standing.
We do. We have folks on one site out of the 22 staff there. Four of us now that are close to 30 years of engagement in that service, and then we have another group that are 20 years, 10 years.
Wow.
But what happens is when you have people for that amount of time, their life changes as well, and they sure. become parents and they don't want to be full-time, so they'll be part-time. So now we have this big group of people that are engaged, but not so many of them work 40 hours a week anymore.
Yeah.
They work 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, depending on what makes their family tick. And because we've been able to make those accommodations, we've been able to retain those staff, and that they've had the opportunity to do different roles within the organisation. And then at the other site, which we've had for 12 years, there's three that have been there for the whole 12 years, and then groups again.
Yeah, the cohort. Staggered down. Well, so you kind of touched on a little mm-hmm. bit of what keeps people there. What are some things that stand out when you think of, I mean, you can start with yourself, like what, besides mm-hmm. the passion for kids?
I think the opportunities to be able to attend different events, mm-hmm. like the World Forum, to be able to support training as people have been ready to take that next step. Mm-hmm. They've been supported to nice. Undertake the next qualification. I'm hoping as one of the leaders that there's a community that is a little bit forgiving sometimes. Some days you're not your best, but if you're working with someone who knows that, you know, they know you personally, they have that commitment to you as a team member, you know, they've got your back. They will help you through the difficult times. And sometimes just having fun as a team, mm-hmm. having a laugh, finding some joy in the day, mm-hmm. being able to say to another team member, I need to tap out, I need a break.
Yeah.
Can I swap with you? Can I do something else? Mm-hmm. Just sometimes when those days are big and they're hard and you're tired.
Right. That's beautiful. And I would think that would also be something that would echo in the States as you look at folks who are, you know, really out of sight for a long period of time. It's all of those same characteristics. So when I think about your settings, can you tell us a little bit about the things that you're noticing as maybe some of the tougher situations or you know, some of those behaviors and things are, it's just interesting to see. And we've talked a lot, I think, with folks throughout the World Forum this week, is things are pretty similar worldwide for young children, but they're also pretty unique and different. But what stands out for you when you think of over your 30 years, are there things that you go, wow, that was really a hard period because of
Most definitely, coming out of COVID, we've noticed really big behaviours. Mm-hmm. And I have a theory behind that I think that in that very formative time when we were in lockdowns and children weren't spending time with cousins, grandparents, they weren't going to parks, they weren't going to birthday parties, they weren't having sleepovers, they weren't participating in dance classes or sports programs or whatever they were doing. They weren't going to supermarkets to run up and down the aisles.
True, yeah.
And we wore masks and we were frightened, so we just weren't around each other. And that group of children lost the opportunity to take some of the social cues on from other people, mm-hmm. to learn how to be resilient. If you're only in such a small group, there's not chances to have that controlled conflict,
right? Right.
Where nobody comes to harm, but you can resolve a problem. Mm-hmm. So we've seen some really, really big behaviours. We've seen some very significant communication delays. Mm. And again, we've been pondering these questions, and we really do think, again, that there wasn't that opportunity for conversational language. There right. wasn't the opportunity for modelling from different people. People stayed at home to feel safe, so they right. went to screens. Mm-hmm. And no matter how great the app or the program or whatever you're using, it doesn't replace that face-to-face, being in the same place,
right.
contact, and just that enrichment of language when you're not around a whole lot of different people. So the big behaviours have definitely been a real challenge. And people were tired during the COVID period. I'm sure it was the same in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Early childhood professionals just got up and still went to work,
yes.
because
yep.
they had to care for what we called our essential workers.
Yes, same. Yep.
So they still attended when other people had the opportunity to work from home. We were doing everything that we could to try and be safe, to make the environment as safe, when we didn't know.
Right. Everyone was just guessing day to day.
And we were scared, and yeah. anybody with ongoing health concerns was very, very frightened.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling some of the colleagues this week that at 11 a.m. every morning, our premier would come on and say, these are the cases for today, these are where they've been,
yeah.
and this is the change we're making. And it was all on the run. So you were in that constant
yeah.
flight, fright.
Right. Freeze. Yeah, all of those
all of
things.
The time.
Yeah.
And I just can't imagine how much cortisol was pumping through everybody's body, because you waited till 11 o'clock to go, what challenge will I have today?
Yeah, right.
And people haven't bounced back mm-hmm. from that, even though we are a number of years on. People have decided that early childhood is tough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the best paid environment.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been the challenges of some staff moving out of services, and us really losing that expertise, or
yeah.
people just being tired and not having that spark, that passion.
Mm-hmm.
That this week we've heard the passion
yes.
in the rooms
yeah.
we've been in.
Yes.
And I feel inspired to go back and take that passion back with
yeah.
me. But it really has been a challenge where people just say, I'm done.
I'm done. Yeah. And that's such a great way that we could kind of wrap up this conversation, because we found out in this week, 50 countries represented all over the world, early childhood professionals in various levels of the work, direct service, leadership, nonprofit supports, all of those places, and all have that united core heart for kids and wanting children to be seen, to be heard, to be cared for, to be loved. And it's just been so inspiring, and it's been so much fun to get to know you, Mary Louise, and Kelly and I. We've had such a great time, and we're all not leaving till tomorrow, so we're going to have some more fun tonight. And but I thank you for giving us a little snapshot of
Thank
life
you.
In Australia.
And I think we can go away from this week to find joy
yes.
again in what we do
yes.
and see moments of joy and push the message that we are part of a world community.
Yes.
And I'm so excited to work out where the next one's going to be so
I
that
know.
I can come.
I know. It'll be exciting to know. They don't tell you until maybe a year out. I'm not sure. It's every 2 years. So thank you, Mary Louise Clifford from Australia, for being my new friend and
yes.
for joining us on Inclusion Matters. And those of you who are listening, you can find out more about our trip on our social media and on our scrolling homepage. We've done, Kelly Nelson has been fabulous on writing up some great little synopses of what we've done each day. And she's been the selfie queen. And one thing we will laugh about the forum is there's no shortage of photos.
No shortage at all. So many opportunities for photos.
Yes.
And so many photos of bang, 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 bang. Yes. So many photos of No, one more. It was 10 more.
Yes. You kind of feel like you're in a celebrity realm. But thank you, Mary Louise. Thank you to our listeners for listening to Inclusion Matters. And we'll talk to you next time.
For more information and a wide range of resources, visit inclusivechildcare.org. You'll find information on our coaching services and support on topics such as healthy child development, strategies for encouraging positive behavior, and guidance on including children with unique social, emotional, and learning needs, and much more.